ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 24th of June. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal land in Sydney. Iran's supreme leader says his country will not accept aggression from anyone after the country launched missiles at a US military base in Qatar. The retaliatory attack was triggered by American strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities over the weekend, but appears to have been choreographed to avoid killing any US troops, something which could have fueled a fiery response from the White House. From Tel Aviv, here's Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran.
As evening crept across Qatar, the night sky lit up. Iran firing upon the Gulf state, sending ballistic and short-range missiles towards the Al Udeid base run by the United States. Vision verified by the ABC shows interceptors streaking through the sky and large pieces of debris landing across the capital, Doha. The Qatari government condemning the attack, saying it was a breach of Qatari sovereignty, airspace and international law, insisting it reserves the right to retaliate.
But I want to give a special hello to Al Udeid Air Base, sometimes referred to as the Deed. That's a little sinister term, the Deed, today.
In mid-May, Donald Trump toured the Gulf and stopped by in Qatar. A month later and the base was firmly in the sights of Tehran. The thousands of US military personnel stationed there had been evacuated hours prior. The suggestion being this Iranian strike was telegraphed to avoid casualties, but to send a message after US stealth bombers raided Iranian nuclear sites on Sunday. Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson is Ismail Baghaei.
It is truly incomprehensible how you can describe an act of aggression, a crime, and a blatant violation of the law as something admirable.
The Qatari government was leaving nothing to chance, preemptively shutting down airspace over the country. The United Arab Emirates and Bahrain following suit as the missiles were launched. US bases in Iraq also put on notice for strikes. Ismail Baghaei says the US and Israel needed to face the consequences for strikes on its soil.
The military aggression of the Zionist regime against the Islamic Republic of Iran has been carried out with coordination, collaboration and support from the United States. Therefore, the US is also considered complicit in all the crimes that have taken place over the past 11 days.
Missile barrages have been launched at Israel for days since the country began its bombing raids across Iran. The Israel Defense Forces spokesperson, Brigadier General Effi Defrin, confirming a fresh wave of strikes.
A few hours ago, the IDF completed the most extensive wave of attacks it's carried out to date in Tehran.
Israel had been targeting Iran's nuclear facilities and military targets, and in the last few hours hit the notorious Evin jail, where political prisoners languish behind bars. Brigadier General Defrin says it's an appropriate target.
Evin prison is a symbol of oppression for the Iranian people. Those who were defined as enemies of the regime were held in that prison. They were severely tortured there.
Efforts to evacuate foreign nationals from Israel are still underway. The UK's Foreign Secretary David Lammy confirming a Royal Air Force plane flew 63 British nationals and their families to Cyprus.
Further flights will follow in the coming days, security allowing. We will prioritise those with greatest need and contact those allocated a seat directly.
An Australian flight was due to take off from Tel Aviv's Ben Gurion Airport on Monday local time, but was cancelled due to incoming missiles from Iran. The government is hopeful it will take off today. This is Matthew Doran in Tel Aviv, reporting for AM.
Donald Trump says no Americans or Qataris were harmed in Iran's missile attack on the US airbase. The US president took to social media to respond to the attack. America's editor John Lyons is in Washington. He joined me earlier. John, what's the president said?
Isabella, it's quite remarkable. The situation between the US and Iran appears to be de-escalating, and Donald Trump has said on Truth Social, his social media site, "I want to thank Iran for giving us early notice, that is, of those missile attacks, which made it possible for no lives to be lost and nobody to be injured. Perhaps Iran can now proceed to peace and harmony in the region," he says, and I will enthusiastically encourage Israel to do the same. Thank you for your attention to this matter! So the notion that 2 days after America dropped 14 bunker buster bombs on Iran, he is now thanking Iran for giving the US warning that they were going to attack a military base in Doha shows how this whole thing has been turned on its head.
And John, what does this suggest about how the Americans might respond moving forward?
I think the clear message here, Isabella, is Donald Trump does not want to be engaged in another war in the Middle East by the US. And I think he clearly wants to de-escalate. And I think his clear message here is we've done our bit with the bombing of the nuclear sites. This is now Israel's war. I do not want to take the United States into another war.
John Lyons in Washington. Jonathan Panikoff is the director of the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative at the Atlantic Council's Middle East program. I spoke to him earlier. Jonathan, thank you for joining us on AM. Iran's latest attack on a US airbase, how seriously does this escalate the ongoing conflict?
Thank you so much for having me and good morning. I think that's going to ultimately depend on whether this is the end of the attacks or just the beginning. If it's the end, then it actually has the potential to de-escalate the conflict. The reality is this was very clearly and carefully planned. In other words, the Iranians warned Qatar that this was coming. They designed it in a way that clearly was not going to likely cause deaths or injuries to U.S. forces. And so the question now is whether or not President Trump can take this as a win and say, I'm not going to retaliate, and you could see the beginning of a diplomatic off-ramp.
So in a way, was this a move from Iran to perhaps save face with their own population or on the global stage?
I think this was 100% about messaging to their own population. Look, Iran's propaganda machine is pretty extensive. And the reality is there's a long history of claiming massive successful attacks and retaliation that in reality aren't proven on the ground, that actually on the ground very little impact was had. I think that very well could be the case here. I think you'll see Iran claim a tremendous win among its domestic media and domestic population, but it did so knowing that it would do that while also trying to create the opening to ensure President Trump did not have to feel like he needed to retaliate as well, thus leading to an escalatory spiral.
And how likely do you think it is that Iran might come back to the negotiating table after such serious attacks in recent days?
I think it's going to be a challenge. Iran is not a monolith within the regime itself. Ultimately, the supreme leader gets to make the last call. But you'll have hardliners who have no interest in having Iran resume any sort of diplomatic negotiations and will actually be trying to push ahead perhaps on anything that Iran has squirreled away, for instance, in terms of its enrichment at Fordo and whether the highly enriched uranium was moved. And the hardliners may say, no, the way that we show our strength is by once again seeking to enrich and using any of the secretive sites Iran may have. But you'll have a number of pragmatists that say, no, we have to go back. We have to sit down. I think that there'll be a bit of a fight within the Iranian regime about what comes next.
And there are reports Iran is looking to abandon the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Should we be concerned at that prospect?
Absolutely, because in that case, then there's absolutely no IAEA inspectors on the ground. There's no monitoring that will occur. I think the real concern is Israel had two goals and the U.S. really had one goal, and that was about destroying the nuclear program, and Israel's other goal was setting back Iran's ballistic missile program. I think it's just too early to say whether the nuclear program was actually destroyed. Even if Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan were destroyed as sites, there is a possibility that if Iran was able to move some of the highly enriched uranium, you combine it with some of the more advanced machines, and very quickly now Iran is still only weaponization away from having a nuclear weapon. This doesn't mean that this hasn't been somewhat successful. There's clearly been a big setback in Iran's nuclear program. But how extensive that is, I think, still remains to be determined. And if they leave the NPT, it'll make it even harder to monitor and to verify what it is Iran is doing or is not doing.
You mentioned earlier that there were perhaps different views within the Iranian regime about what to do moving forward. Does it have many options, and do you see it surviving?
I see the regime surviving for now, unless the U.S. makes a decision that it actually wants fundamental regime change and direct strikes and takes efforts to destroy the regime. But I think it's important to define what we mean by regime change. The way Israel, for instance, is thinking about it, I think they're largely thinking about a completely different government that's a democratic Iran, perhaps. I think that's very unlikely. Even in the event that this regime were to be pushed off the leadership of Iran, what's more likely to come is not democracy in Iran, it's probably IRGC-istan. In other words, the elite guards who protect the revolution. I think it's more likely you get some sort of military autocracy that has a fig leaf association with the current theocratic one, as opposed to a theocratic autocracy. That's a long way from democracy. Most successful regime change and revolutions that are lasting have to come from inside the country, not from external attacks. And it just doesn't seem like we're quite there yet in terms of inside Iran. While there's a lot of anger and hatred towards the regime, that you're seeing the people ready to actually push against it, rise up, and try to topple it.
Jonathan Panikoff, thank you so much for joining us on AM.
Thanks for having me.
And Jonathan Panikoff is the director of the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative at the Atlantic Council's Middle East program. Three major airlines, Etihad, Emirates and Qatar Airlines, have been forced to rearrange their flight paths and even turn around their aircrafts mid-flight because of the conflict. And passengers are being warned to expect further delays. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
Passengers board their flight from Melbourne's Tullamarine Airport to the Middle East, only to walk off the plane before takeoff. Melbourne Airport has confirmed at least two of its flights to Doha have been delayed due to passengers requesting to get off. A Qatar Airlines flight scheduled to land in Melbourne from Doha this morning has also been grounded. Melbourne man George Katsifoulis was flying back to Australia from Athens when his flight was diverted.
And there were no announcements in the airport, so everyone's just standing around, walking around, asking what's going on.
When George Katsifoulis arrived at Doha Airport, all the departure boards were blank and the terminal was eerily quiet.
They haven't overtly told us, they just said the airspace is closed, but they've got TV screens here and the news is flashing up, so everyone knows what's happening. It's just not being spoken about in overt terms, but everyone knows what's happened.
Flights in and out of Dubai, one of the world's busiest airports, were also temporarily suspended. Local media in the United Arab Emirates are reporting other major airlines, Emirates, Etihad and Fly Dubai, also temporarily suspended its flights to Iran, Iraq, Israel, Syria and St. Petersburg until further notice due to airspace restrictions. Sydney Airport says it received confirmation one Virgin flight to Doha today will be diverted. Aviation expert Keith Tonkin says we should expect further disruptions.
Well, definitely in the next day or two, I expect there'll be more changes. And then after that, I guess it depends on what happens between the parties involved in this conflict. And that might take a little bit of time to unravel. I think people should feel safe. The airlines will have contingencies in place to make sure that if they can't land at their intended destination or if airspace is closed, that they're able to divert somewhere else. And those contingencies rely on good planning and good information, and things can change, but generally these larger airlines will have dynamic operations control information to assist the pilots to make good decisions.
The federal government has issued an urgent warning to travellers on the Smart Traveller website, saying the situation in the Middle East is unpredictable and it could get worse with little warning.
Kathleen O'Connor and Bridget Fitzgerald with that report. Analysts say all eyes are on the Strait of Hormuz, a shipping route in the Persian Gulf partially controlled by Iran that's critical for the world's oil supply. Iran's parliament has approved a move to close the passage, but the country's Supreme National Security Council is yet to make a final decision. Analysts say its closure could upend the global financial system, producing a surge in the oil price and global inflation. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
Iran's strike on US military bases is being closely watched, and its next move could have serious economic consequences, especially if it closes the Strait of Hormuz, a narrow passage situated between the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. It's the only sea route from the Persian Gulf to the Arabian Sea. Dr. Jason Miller is a professor of supply chain management at Michigan State University.
20% of global petroleum product demand transits through that strait. About 14 million barrels a day of crude oil and condensate, and then another roughly 6 million barrels a day of refined petroleum products.
The consequences for global markets would be significant, as Australian economist Sol Eslake explains.
If that is the case, then there's bound to be some American response to that, and the price of oil could well go above $100 a barrel and stay there for some time. Now, we've been there before for an extended period, and it wouldn't mean the end of the world, so to speak, but it would certainly mean higher inflation.
Andrew Lilly, Barrenjoey Investment Bank's chief interest rate strategist, says markets are watching for any inflationary pressures from the conflict.
This might re-trigger another bout of inflation in the form of transportation costs and oil prices. So there's been a 25% increase in global oil prices since this conflict began, and that's threatening the return of inflation to target in all advanced economies.
Iran uses the Strait of Hormuz as a bargaining chip, both tactically and strategically. Dr. Renard Mansour is a senior research fellow at Chatham House.
The regime in Tehran is facing an existential fight right now. And so its survival in the short term requires escalation and requires a response. And this is one of the bargaining chips that Iran has, that it's able to influence global energy markets.
In ominous tone, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has warned the US retains options to deal with any efforts to close the strait.
Tanya Dendrinos there with additional reporting by David Taylor. With both the US President Donald Trump and Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu raising the question of leadership change in Iran, what's the response from the Iranian diaspora? Annie Guest reports.
Before fleeing Iran for Australia, Rana Dadpour says she protested against the Iranian regime and was jailed for breaking strict religious laws and walking unchaperoned with a man. She's now the director of Australian United Solidarity for Iran and a research fellow at James Cook University.
In Iran, there has been always uprisings since the beginning of this regime in 1979. Every other year, there's been an uprising, mass protest among Iranians from all across the, you know, lives and classes, and all of them have been crushed brutally and violently. People have been killed, they have been tortured, they have been raped, and again they rise up, and then again they crush again.
Darmoon Jahani from La Trobe University researches political attitudes in the Iranian diaspora. His father was an activist in Iran before the family migrated to Australia, and he says they all want regime change.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm somebody who's never been able to go to Iran due to political problems from my family. I just want what many other Iranians want as well, which is freedom and justice finally, and to go back to Iran.
Damoon Jahani says while Iranians have mixed feelings about the Israeli and US attacks, previous research by the Garman Group has shown 80% don't support the regime.
They're stuck in the crossfires, where they're both against the regime and also against what Israel is doing right now. But by far and large, the discourse that is coming out of Iran, the main discourse that is coming out, is that this is an opportunity for the regime to go. It's just that in a state of war, people get scared, and that's completely natural as well.
Women's rights activist Azadeh Davachi's family was persecuted when she protested against the Iranian government. They've since migrated to Australia, and she's excited by what she calls a growing online movement from within Iran, agitating for regime change.
But what they are doing now is by social media that they are writing against the government, they're making campaign, they're trending hashtags, but they haven't mentioned any plan. But through the social media, they show their attitude that they want to make this change happen. And I think in near future, it can lead to a potential like social upheavals or something more serious comparing to now.
But Azadeh Devachi emphasises that it's up to Iranians living inside the country to choose what action to take.
Annie Guest reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hello, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. After the US bombing of key Iranian nuclear facilities, Donald Trump is now openly advocating for regime change to make Iran great again, he says. But is that really a possibility? Today, Ali Vaez from the International Crisis Group on the three options now open to Iran and why surrender is not the one it'll go for. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.